Blog Talk Radio.
I am your host, Wanda McKinley, and Stephanie Afford as a co-host. I am the founder of We Are Survivors, which is a nonprofit organization. Our purpose is to provide a stable environment for abused and battered women and children by providing temporary shelter, counseling, and employment training. We want to help women transition from abusive situations and to be able to learn how to be self-sufficient women in society. Our vision is to empower women and to show them that they can and will survive and thrive in society on their own, and to uplift them and provide them with a new perspective on a normal life by enhancing and elevating them. I am a survivor of domestic violence. I was raped from the age of 7 to 18 by my biological father, as well as my stepfather. My ex-husband was also abusive. He was sexually, financially, verbally, emotionally, and physically abusive, and I was with him for 12 years. God has called me to be transparent so that I may help women and children who have walked or may be walking in my shoes. Before we get started on our program this evening, I'm going to introduce again Stephanie. And Stephanie's going to talk about some of the fundraising opportunities that We Are Survivors have that you can also participate in support. Stephanie? Is she there? Let's try again.
Can you hear me?
Stephanie, are you there? There we go. Now I can hear you.
Okay.
Can you
Hello,
go ahead
everyone.
And let us know?
I want to share with you about the fundraisers that we have going on for We Are Survivors. We currently have Compass Bank. And if you use our code anytime, well, if you link your account to We Are Survivors each time that you use your card, then that will support us. Our code for Compass Bank for We Are Survivors is 113631. Again, it's 113631. And if you open a new account and link it to We Are Survivors, or if you currently have an account with them, you can link it to We Are Survivors. We also do CPN discount card as a fundraiser. It's $15 annually. You get discounts all over the U.S. Half of that comes to We Are Survivors. If you're interested in that, then just let me know. We also do the Kroger Plus card for one of our fundraisers. If you go on Kroger.com and register your Kroger Plus card, because most cards are not registered. You're able to use it to get your discounts, but it's not registered. So you have to go in there and register it. And then you go to KrogerRewards.com and you choose We Are Survivors as the organization that you want to link to, and it will link you to us. And each quarter they will send us a donation according to what is spent that is connected to We Are Survivors. And then we also have Tom Thumb that we're currently doing as a fundraiser, and you link your card to Tom Thumb to us through Tom Thumb. If anybody is interested, if you text me at 817-320-2571, I'll help you get, you know, whichever one set up that you choose to do, or all of them. So those are currently our fundraisers that we have. Wanda, back to you.
Thank you. Today we will be talking to Kamisha Coleman. She is the author of He Loves Me Not, Buried Tears of Betrayed Love. Ms. Coleman, how are you doing today?
I'm good, Wanda.
Thank you for joining us today. It's a pleasure and an honor to have you as our guest today. Now, Kamisha, you are a sexual and domestic violence advocate. You are a motivational speaker. You are a self-published author. You're also a life coach. And so just by what you are currently doing, we can say that you do strive to help many individuals and move them from victim to survivor. Now tell us about the journey that God has put you on that has led you to these amazing accomplishments. Explain to us why God chose you, why you feel that He's put you on this journey, and how do you identify with patterns of abuse to be able to be this advocate and a motivational speaker? Explain to us.
Okay, well, that was a mouthful. Let me see if I can tell you all
those
questions.
Just break the dam first, the first part.
Okay. First, I would like to say that I am a survivor of domestic violence and also teen dating violence and child molestation, in which my book talks about that. But before I got to the book, I experienced a lot of low self-esteem and doubting myself and unworthiness of myself. I labeled myself as a people pleaser. I let people take advantage of me, and I overcompromised because I was always a helper. By nature, I was a helper. And I really got sick and tired of my life. I was drinking a lot to cope with my issues. I was partying a lot. I couldn't hold a steady relationship, and I couldn't quite figure out why I would leave the good men and attract the monsters. And so one day I signed up for counseling, and it was there that I said, you know what, I'm not only going to help myself, I'm going to use what I learned to help someone else. And so I started to read and research a lot of things about relationships and love and marriage, abuse, and to really gain a lot of knowledge. And with that knowledge, I gained an understanding of what happened to me and the things that took place, like with the relationships that I couldn't hold. You know, I was always running from that relationship or always being accused of cheating when really the abuser was usually the cheater. So a lot of things that I learned along the way that said, you know what, this is some good information, and I know there are a lot of people that need this information. And it was back in 2008, before I even had the counseling, God revealed to me that I would be speaking among a group, this large group of women, and I was like, that ain't even me. Because I was shy,
right.
I was isolated, I was withdrawal, I wasn't trying to have it. My teeth were jacked up. I'm like, Jesus, I don't know why you tripping with me.
I know the feeling.
Okay, I just didn't have the self-esteem. I mean, you can ask me one thing, and I was going to give you back two words, because that was the end of the conversation. So to speak above, you know, to a large audience, which is out of the question. But slowly, as I came to Christ, I ended up marrying a preacher's son. As I came to Christ and I learned about God, not just going to church, but I learned about God, who revealed my true identity. He revealed what true love was. And it was through that I said, you know what, there's a little bit more to this. And so I started to question relationships. I started to question marriage. I started to question my thoughts that I was having, because there were a lot of negative thoughts. You know, you can't do this. Who do you think you are? And so I wanted to know the truth. And through the counseling, it helped a whole lot. And so now it is my duty. I have been called by God to help His people. And I'm going to obey God, because there is no other like Him. He was the only one to bring me out of that darkness and into the light. So here I am as a transformational coach, as a speaker, as the author of He Loves Me Not, which talks about child molestation, teen dating violence, and also domestic violence. In the book, like I said, it's a great teaching tool, not just telling my story, but also telling, you know, the red flags to look for in abuse, or also a ways on how to boost your own self-esteem, how to heal from abuse, and also talking about some of the symptoms after you leave the abusive relationship, with, you know, depression and post-trauma, what is it, PTSD syndrome.
Post-traumatic syndrome.
Yes, that one. And and also the 20 principles of loving yourself more, because a lot of times when you've gone through so much and people have put you down and told you what you were not, and you didn't get that love and that support, you don't love yourself because no one else loved you. You know, your parents didn't give you that love that you needed. So you don't really love yourself. You abuse yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so the book is, you know, it's an informational, it's an educational tool, it's an empowering tool to help other teen and as well women, mostly. But, and even men, it can help them as well, especially if they have daughters, just to give them education and a pathway to talk to their daughters, treat them right, date their daughters, take them out to dinner, open the doors for their daughters, to show them what a good man is supposed to look like, because they don't know, you know. And then it's less likely that she will allow another guy to disrespect her because my daddy didn't treat me that way.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have mentioned that you've gone through some domestic violence, molestation. Can you walk us through that part of your life?
Yes, I was molested about at the age of 7 by my stepfather's brother at my own house, in my own room, while my parents were there. And this went on off and on for years, and finally I told it, and both parents were there, my stepfather and my mother, and I didn't get the reaction that I expected to get. I got complete silence, and the silence was so loud it hurt worse than the actual sexual abuse. It really hurt. It there was no baby, I'm sorry, or you're okay, you know, it's not your fault. I didn't get any type of support, so me telling it hurt. And what was the kicker part about it was that he told me, he said, "Don't tell your mother. She'll be mad at you." And so for years, I never told. And when I did tell, the response that I got was correct. You know, he had told me she's going to be mad. But she didn't get mad until after the divorce came, and then she became the abuser with the emotional and the mental abuse that I received from her. So,
isn't that something, though? Because I know when with my father, my mother actually walked in, and she actually left him, but my mother was a house mom, and so she eventually went back to my father. And the animosity and the anger that she had, she took it out on me. And when she did finally leave my father and divorce him for the third time, my stepfather told her before he married my mother that he wanted to marry me instead. So my mother was told ahead of time, "Hey, I'm looking at your daughter a certain kind of way." And as a child, you would think that your mother, especially this is the second go-round, a bell, a siren, something would go off to say, "Okay, this is the moment where you get up, you pack your things, and you leave because I'm going to protect my daughter." But instead, she kept him there. She married this man. You worked two jobs. So you were gone from sun up to sun down. And who do you think filled that gap? But when you would find out little things, the anger and the abuse and the going upside heads, and your words were towards me and not towards this grown man. And me being a mother, I'll never understand that process that a mother goes through when that happens, because, and maybe because I have gone through it and I'm a survivor, but because of that, I protected my child so that a man can even breathe in her direction. Cousin, uncle, I didn't care.
Right.
My thing was, and I questioned her all the time. She didn't realize why until last year, and she's 22. But I questioned her all the time to say, hey, baby, has anyone made you uncomfortable? And because her father, my ex-husband, knew what I'd gone through, he was really protective of our daughter. So I can't imagine if my daughter ever came to me that I would take that out. And that's something I really want to, I don't really want to understand it, but I want to try to maybe comprehend, what is it in moms that makes you turn away or against your daughters when they're coming to you and they're saying, hey, mom, I really need you. But for some reason, are you ready to say something?
Yeah, I was going to say one that I was able to identify. Doing my research, I found that there are three people involved. There's the victim, there's the offender, and there's the denier. And that mm-hmm. denier can be any part. It can be the father or the mother. But there are always three people, and we feel like nobody knows, but pretty much people know about it, but they just don't talk about it. Because once I started to tell my story, there were many that came forward, you know. But I think it's because that it is so common. And when I was doing interviews with other women, it is so common for the mother to say, get over it, or don't speak about that again, or they don't say anything because of the commonality of it. And I feel like it has been watered down to where this is acceptable. You just take it and be quiet about it. And it's not. It's wrong. It mm-hmm. breaks you. You know, it destroys your life if you don't get help. And that's the reason why I'm out and I do what I do, because I want people to know that this is not right. I don't care if mama went through it or grandmama, Annie, it is not right. It is unacceptable.
Right.
We're not going to keep
right.
a family. We're not going to keep this secret alive anymore. You know, so that is the main reason. I have a daughter as well, and I said it won't happen to her. And I have three children. And from the age of two, I taught my children about their body parts and explained to them, no one is to touch you, maybe a doctor, and I need to be in the room. So they know.
Exactly.
And like you did as well, I asked them, are y'all okay? How was your day? And so I'm throwing those hints. I want to know, you know, because sometimes a child cannot explain what just happened, you know. So.
Right.
And I don't interrupt. I let them talk. You know, tell me what happened in your own words. So that's very important that we listen to our children and that we ask questions. If you see something that is unnormal, you know, going on, the child is crying a lot or wetting the bed, becoming the symptoms, or they having these sexual acts, you know, just all of a sudden, or they're really angry and isolated all of a sudden. These are all signs that something is going on with their child. And for you to step in and say, are you okay? What's going on with you? You know, to open up the conversation. So, Wanda, I think that, you know, no one person can fight this battle. It's so widespread that
yes,
we need everybody that is willing to walk the same walk, to walk it with us, you know, and speak boldly and loudly about it, because it is not right in any type of way for anyone to be robbed of their innocence, of their childhood, or their happiness. It's not right. And so I'm out on the weekends promoting my book, you know, speaking to people. And I hear the same stories over and over. This is a different situation, but it's the same story. And it really
mm-hmm.
breaks my heart. It really does. So
it's a psycho. Kamisha, one thing that I know we as survivors really want to focus on is we want to help that mother. But what happens is the child that comes or the children that comes with that abused mother, they've witnessed it, be it they've seen it, they've heard it, however they are a part of it. What happens is they have grown up in a house where domestic violence was accepted for a period of time. So
right.
That child is going to mimic what they saw.
Correct.
That child,
right.
if that child does not get the help, the same type of help, if not more in-depth because of children's brains, of course, are wired totally different than an adult. If that child doesn't get counseling, if that child doesn't get help, that child's hand is not grabbed and say, hey, that's not the normal way of life, they're going to do the exact same thing. So when
yes.
we hear these stories, and when you have this mother that may overlook her child coming to her, it may be because, hey, in her world, well, maybe you said something that wasn't right, or maybe you made him angry, or maybe his dinner was not hot enough, because they may have witnessed and wasn't properly counseled to say, hey, that you can't, that's not the way of life. And I know for me, for my husband, because we started dating at 19, I left him at 31. I stayed
mm-hmm.
with him because I didn't want my child to be raised in a broken home. But in the same token, my child was the reason why I left him, because I didn't want my child to think it's okay for a man to talk to you, treat you, be out all hours of the night, as he say, manage the household money, when it was more like micromanage what you make. I didn't want to bring her up with the mindset that that's okay. So
right.
she was the reason why I stayed with him, but she was the reason why I left him.
Right. I can definitely say on witnessing that abuse from my mother and my stepfather. He was abusive toward my mother. And when I did start to date my very first boyfriend, he was abusive. And I actually witnessed him beating up the mother of his child. And she warned me that I give you 3 months and he'd be doing the same thing to you. And I'm like, oh, no way. No, I don't do anything
mm-hmm.
for a man to hit me. And she was so right, but it doesn't always start with a punch or, you know, the real aggressive. It started so lightly that I didn't really know that I was being abused. But over time, he would twist my wrist, Wanda, and he would twist them so much that they were so sore I couldn't barely hold a plate of food. I would, you know, just barely could hold my own food. So it started out like that, and then it went from the he wanted to scare me to where I wouldn't talk to a man. I just recently started to look people in the eyes a couple of years ago because I was still afraid to look at people in the eye. He had
mm-hmm.
traumatized me. And to put that fear in
wow.
me, not to leave him and not to cheat on him, you know, electrocuted me with extension cords and stuff like that. And it was just, my self-esteem was broken at that point. My uncle had already, this uncle who loved me, used to bring me gifts, had already broken the boundaries, right? So my inner this teen relationship, here I am getting more damaged. I'm getting more broken. And so by the time I got into my adult life, oh, my, the abuse
mm-hmm.
has progressed. I mean, held hostage with guns and tied up and thrown matches at my feet. It was too much, and I knew it was wrong, but my mother had gone through the same thing. I saw it, and I kind of
right.
felt that this was the way it was, even
mm-hmm.
though I knew this is not love. This is not how you're supposed to be treated. I knew it in my heart, like, this is not right. This is not right. So I do agree with you when you say that if you don't see that healthy relationship, you're more likely to repeat the same pattern as
yep.
what you saw growing up as a child. So that's what you see as normal. That's the way of living. And it's not normal. That is not the way to live. It's not love.
And that's why we're trying to get it out more and more so that people will start to speak up more now. It seems like now people are finally starting to speak out. I know I kept mine in for years and years, and I haven't totally told the whole story of all the abuse that I've been through, but it's coming.
Yeah. That is awesome.
I had a coworker Tuesday, and she came to my office, and everyone at my job knows what I'm doing. And it's like, I need to talk to you, he's going to lunch. And I was like, okay. She's been married 26 years. And her biological father had a totally separate family. He's chief of police where they're from. And so he wasn't really present. He filled that void. So you go to, there's so many different types of abuse. A lot of people think, when you hear the word abuse, they think physical. They think the bruises, you know, but abuse is so much deeper than that, because you have your emotional abuse, you have your mental abuse. A lot of women don't even realize that there is financial abuse.
There are
so many. Of course, the verbal abuse that you endure. But for her, it was emotional abuse, because her father wasn't there for her as a father figure. So her husband, 26 years, she accepted so much. And this woman opened up to me, and in conversation, she's talking about her husband, and she's decided to, you know, separate from him. I've got to find myself. I feel like I'm drowning. You know, he's cheated before on her. And she, you know, went through that with him, walked through him with that, forgave him for that. But because of his indiscretions, he's very controlling. He's, you know, always questioning her. He's always going behind her. And because she's one of those good women that cook and clean and, okay, what can I do for you when she doesn't do it? Well, why haven't you done this? Or why haven't you done that? So she's explaining all of this to me. And in my head, I'm thinking, something's missing. Something because of how she's, you know, like uncomfortable, like because she started out with, she's like, she's holding back. And I'm like, okay, there's something you want to say to me. Just say it. We are adults. You don't have to act like you're, because it was, I could see it on her, like she had done something wrong. And she blurted out in her conversation that she was molested by her stepfather. That's how she talked, because she kept moving. And I was like, I never went back to it. But she brought it up in conversation, but she moved right straight through it, and I didn't want to discuss it, and that's what happened, and now I'm leaving my... So it's a lot of healing there that has to take place. And I think for her, because we've had so many conversations about, you know, her husband and concerns, but never ever has she addressed the molestation. And for her to run through it real quick, like, so okay, I'm going to say this, I get it off my chest, but I don't want to talk about it right now, I just want to let you know and get it off me. I was like, wow. So in my head, that was the first step. She acknowledged it.
Right.
And it's amazing to me how women, we hide so much pain. We have so many questions, and until we find that one person, and Kamisha, you may be that person to somebody. I was that person for her. And Stephanie, because you're coming out and you're telling your story and you're part of We Are Survivors, and you are truly part of We Are Survivors and one of the backbones of this organization, because you're out in front, because we are women that are out in front. God is bringing those women into us, because we worked together a year, and when she said that, and like I said, she ran through it and kept going, didn't stop, and then went on to the next statement just like that. I was like, wow, I caught it. So for me, I planted that seed because it wouldn't be, it would be an unjust to her if I didn't go back to that at a later date to say, okay, let's talk about that.
Yeah. So, or even just saying, just, are you okay? You know, cause, and let her open up to you, you know. Because a lot of times the shame is so heavy, you know, and the guilt is you know, overwhelming, you know, and you don't want anybody to judge you any more than you've already been judging yourself. So you keep that in. I've been there, done that. And so in trying to drown it out with the nice cars and the nice clothes and keeping your hair done and your makeup on and your fake smile, and you're like dying on the inside. This, you have poison in your heart that you want to get out, and you just hold it onto it because you see everybody else that appears happy too. So it's like, why am I not happy? You know, something must be wrong with me. And there's something, you have something that you need to let out. And so, and once you let that out, oh my goodness, I'm a freedom. I call the invisible jail. You've been in this invisible jail holding all that anger and all that shame and guilt in. It's such a great feeling to release that and to forgive yourself. Self-forgiveness is so important in the healing process. So,
and that was one thing she did say, the judgment. She didn't want... And before she even really said it, I looked at her and I said, I'm not going to judge you. Whatever it is that you have to say, I said, I'm not going to judge you. And I think that's when she felt like, okay, I can get this off my chest. I don't even know if she shared that. The way she ran through it, I believe I was the first person she said that to out loud.
Wow.
Because she just really ran through and she kept it going. You know, when
it was
when
more like you
I,
got it out and you had to catch it.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and I caught
it. It's like, what did she say?
And it took me literally this morning when I was driving to work, a couple of days later, like, oh my God, she did say that. Because she did. She ran, like she ran a marathon. She said it just, just ran through it. I was like, wow. And I know for her, that took a lot of guts for her to okay, I've got to get this out. Because now she's, like she said today, I'm going to find me. She's like, I've been lost in my husband for 26 years. You've been lost longer than that. But you've been lost in your husband for 26 years. And her thing is, I'm ready to find out who I am.
Yeah.
She bought her ticket today. She's driving all the way from Frisco. She said, but I'm coming.
Wow.
All right.
Awesome. Good for her.
She's like, I'm excited for her because I know for me how I felt the first time that I said it out loud. And then you think, oh, my God, I just said that. And I still get that way. On the way home today, and I actually, on the way home, because I have my moments, people see us. When we're out in public, they see the smiles, they get the hugs, and the nice, sweet persona that we have when we're in public. But what I've realized is people don't realize the hurt and the pain and the moments that we have. You know, as we're healing and walking through our process and listening and healing other women, we also take in some of them. How small it may be, their stories stay with us.
Exactly.
And today, I was crying on the way home. So I pulled over and I literally took pictures of me crying because people see us on Facebook and they see even your beautiful picture, your book, they see us with these smiles from ear to ear.
Right.
No one knows the pain. No one sees the pain that we go through, be it ourselves or for someone else. God just let me to take pictures of me crying, and it just simply says, there's so many tears behind my smiles, and there are. And it's just amazing to me how some people question, because I've had that, question our walk, question our journey. Well, did that really happen to her?
Mm-hmm.
As if, and that's a reason why a lot of women don't step forward. I had an incident at one of my jobs years ago, and my boss sexually assaulted me. And the way he sexually assaulted me was he started out with showing me inappropriate pictures on his phone and made me very uncomfortable. So I kind of expressed that to him. Then what he did was he had a printer in his office, so he'd start printing in my office, which, of course, it caused him to have to come into my office. This is my superior. And my printer was behind me, so you had to walk behind me to get your papers. You didn't ask me to pass them to you. You wanted to walk behind me. So I'm letting women know that it can happen anywhere. It doesn't even have to be in your home. And so this one particular day, I decided, okay, I'm going to allow you to walk behind and get this paper, but I'm getting ready to leave the room. So when I get up to leave the room, he presses his penis up against my butt. I lost it.
Wow.
I called the city that I worked in. I called the police department because you have sexually assaulted. You've made a sexual advance on me that I did not want. And so they come to the establishment. They question him, and he is livid. I call HR, file a report. So HR comes in and they interview me and they interview him and they interview some staff. Well, my particular boss at this time was from a different country. And so what HR choked it up to be was cultural differences. Really?
Oh, wow.
That's what they told me. I don't care what. I don't care what part of the country you're from, that's going to mean the same thing.
Wow.
So we went to, so I took it to court. So press charges against him. And for a lot of people who've never walked or been in certain shoes, when someone is raped and you have a rape victim and they don't want to come forward because they feel like they're going to be raped again, many people don't understand what that means. Well, let me explain it to you. We went to court, and his wife was there to support him. And ironically, his wife had the same name as mine. Imagine that.
Wow.
And he had some coworkers that I worked with that was from the same part of the country he was from. And they got on the stand and painted this horrible picture of me. And I can remember sitting there, and I had a public defense attorney. So I'm crying. I'm like sitting here, and my character is being shredded. So when I got on the stand to defend myself, I couldn't even look in his direction. But to be on that, in that chair, and to be questioned and to be humiliated again and to be made to feel as if I made that up. What did I do to cause him to feel that it was okay? Because I wasn't prepared then, I lost the case. But I learned. It was a lesson. And from that day forward, when I made it back to work, I was so stressed out. I worked there for 4 months. It felt like it was 4 years. But I worked there for just 4 months. And I was so stressed out, I literally could not turn my neck left or right. I had to turn my shoulders to turn my neck. That's how stressed out I was. And the owner came in the building one day. And I asked him, face to face, okay, I know you know what's going on. That man looked at me and said, you'll get over it. I threw those keys at him. Oh, yes. He said, I'll get over it. I threw the keys at him, and I told him, I said, this will not be the last time you hear from me. And it wasn't, because I sued them. This time, though, I was prepared. It wasn't like the court date, the first one. You won that one. But I promise you, you will not win this one. And they did not. And they had to settle in court. And so the message to women is, it doesn't matter where you're at, whether you're at home or at work, because sexual abuse can happen in the workforce. And we overlook it. And we just like, okay, I'm only here for 8 hours. If someone in your workplace makes you feel uncomfortable, then you need to speak out as well.
And it's what people have to
amazing.
Understand is they have to understand that no means no. Even
exactly.
If it's your spouse. If you say no, no means no. That's still abuse.
I did want to point out that when we carry around the feeling of abandonment or neglect or being abused or damaged, unwanted or unappreciated, nobody loves me. When we walk around, we have that in our hearts, you know, when we are probably thinking it as well. We will attract someone that will give you just that same
mm-hmm.
feeling that will make you feel unwanted, unloved, damaged, abused, abandoned, and neglected. So when I reviewed my past relationships, that's exactly what I was getting. I was getting what I had been getting from at home, meaning it started with my parents. I felt abandoned because I don't know my biological father. So I felt neglected because when I told, nobody helped me. I didn't feel loved. I had all these negative feelings about myself. So the men that I attracted gave me those same results of being abused.
Mm-hmm.
Cheated on, lied on. I got the same thing. But it was one morning I woke up, I'm not getting this. What is it? And he told me, he said, take the label off.
Mm.
Meaning I was labeling myself abused with stamped across my forehead. And people can see it.
Isn't that something?
And I was, oh, my God. Oh, my walk is different. My talk is different. My speech is different. I no longer sound like a victim because I took the label off my head.
Wow.
He said, just take the label off. Take the label off.
That's profound.
So in my coaching, I specialize in helping discontent women who have experienced some form of abuse, that feel unworthy, that suffer from low self-esteem or feel stuck in their relationship or their career or their business, by helping them to increase their self-esteem and fine-tune their self-approval and cultivate decision-making so they can move away from their past and step into their purpose. That is what I do, Wanda. We don't want to look at the past. We don't want to look at those labels anymore. And we put some new things on there. We put smart. We put intelligent. We put beautiful. We put magnificent. We put bold. We put, you know, speaker on there. We put author on there. We take those negative labels off and replace them. And so that's a part of what I do. That's who I am. That is my passion. And I love it.
And just hearing you say those words made me feel it.
Did you feel that?
I did.
Yeah, when you say, girl, you are awesome. You are magnificent. You are brilliant. You are smart. You're creative. You feel that. And once
mm-hmm.
you believe it, oh, you just take off.
Watch out. Yeah.
You take off. But it's not until you believe it yourself. Once you, I'm just here to support. I support, and I pull those things out because they're already inside of you, but they're buried underneath the tears, and that's why I named my book, because it was a whole other person there, but I was covered up. I was damaged, and I was covered up with all these different labels, but it was just a whole other person that no one knew.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Not even you.
No.
It's like, because I'm learning new me. It's really right. And then when I see an old characteristic of mine, now, depending on what it is, because I'm still a work in progress, I'm like, okay, so that's why I acted that way. Oh,
right.
Okay. Because
yeah.
I just never was that people person, because our trust,
we
don't trust. And for me, the two people that I should trust the most, the two people that brought me into this world, the two people that nourished me, clothed me, fed me, supposed to have protected me, did the total opposite. So for me, you want me to trust who? You? I can't even trust my mother and father.
Yeah.
Now my mother, I can't, it's like she's my backbone now. And now, you know, she shared things. I didn't know my father was abusing her.
Yeah. So that's why, another reason why she didn't,
So for me now, because I remember when my mother, about 7 or 8 years ago, said, I love you for the first time, I was like, what did you just say?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even know how to receive it. I didn't know how to feel. I really didn't feel anything. I really was mad. Like, how dare you say that to me?
Wow. Wow.
Because that's, you know, I'm like, what? You? And I for a minute was mad. And my son's like, what is wrong? I said, my mom just said, I love you. And they would be like, are you, what are you, or Wanda, you're not drinking. Are you okay? No, I'm like, you don't understand. My mom just said, I love you. I want to say, spell it. Tell me what the definition is. Because how can you tell me that you love me? You hadn't shown me love, woman. Now she says it. I feel it.
Yeah.
But when I first heard it, it sounds so awkward. And I just kind of like didn't say I love you back. I was just like, oh, okay, Mom. Now, I've never called her out her name, but okay, Mom, really? You do? Oh, that's new. That's a new one for me.
Yeah. Well, I didn't even know what love was. I would say the words, but I didn't know what love was. I didn't experience that. But I know now that love is safe. Love is comfortable. Love is easy.
Mm-hmm.
Love is fun. Love is laughter.
Fun, yes.
And it feels good, you know. And so that's how you know that it's love. And it says that in the Bible, that it's kind and it's patient and it's slow to anger. And anything other than that, Wanda, I don't want it. I don't want it. And everything gets connected to love. If you are lacking love, you're probably lacking in money. You're probably lacking on your career. You're probably lacking in your relationships.
Yeah.
And until you love yourself, cannot possibly love someone else. I'm not a counselor, but
true.
I've done enough research. And one of the things that I did was I would look in the mirror and tell myself, I love you. And it was probably that same strange feeling from when your mother said she loved you. I got that same strange, like, what? And I said it again to myself, I love you. Because I had never loved myself because no one else appeared to love me. And now I know what love feels like because I first loved myself. And I said, I'm going to treat you better. I'm going to treat you better. That means I'm going to put good things in this body. I'm not going to, you know, mistreat my body. I'm going to eat right. I'm going to exercise. I'm not going to be in toxic relationship or toxic environment. You know, so that means distance yourself from your family. So
right.
You won't get that unhealthy stuff. That's what I do. But I still love them, but I can love you from a distance.
Isn't that something? Because when your walk changed, because you're walking a different path, that different path takes you away from certain things, certain friends, certain environments, even certain family members. Because I've noticed for me, in a very short period of time, when I accepted this walk and accepted my calling, that I must admit I fought for over a year. and still kind of be like, okay, God, why me? But I have my moments. But I've noticed that the people that I thought were my friends are no longer around. And I had my niece, prime example. My niece came with me. I went to a event for the homeless families and children's school fundraising event. And I went Saturday. And then I left and went to another event. So my niece was like, wow, hey, Wanda. She was like, how long have you known that person? I said, about 6 months. And she looked at me. Well, how long have you been known that person? I said, for about 4 months. Mm-hmm. And then the last person she asked, well, how long? I said, 2 months. She was like, but Aunt Wanda, it's like you all have been knowing each other for years. I said, because God put them in my life. She's like, so for her, she's just kind of set back. And she was like, wow. But when it's God, you can meet somebody yesterday, and it feels like y'all have been around each other all your life because you have that spiritual connection.
Yes, ma'am. Yes.
And even Stephanie is a prime example. I have set up little, and I'm being honest, I'm trying to remember. She may remember, but I'm really trying to remember where Stephanie and I met. It's been less than a year.
You sent me a request on LinkedIn.
And we have been, when I say, okay, if there's something going on that I know we are survivors, somebody needs to be there, and I can't make it, she's there. Stephanie has been by my side, I feel like, since this started. And that's why I can't even remember, like, because it's not important when and where and how we met. What's important is the relationship.
Exactly.
And it's just amazing to me how God has put certain people in my lives. And that's why they've been there. And the people that really were there, I had a friend, my car was down, I would drive her car. I can't tell you where she's at right now. And I couldn't, for some reason, talk to her about We Are Survivors. It's like God wouldn't allow me to share, even though I wanted to tell her what, I want to tell her what happened today. Girl, this is what I've experienced. But God, and we talked daily, but God would not, I could not bring myself to tell her what was going on in my life. But now I understand why, because that, it wasn't for her.
Exactly. Well, I'm real big on going with, or being around people that celebrate me, meaning that you can go around people and they just tolerate you and they don't support you, they don't push you, and, you know, they're not happy when you come in with your announcements and they may roll their eyes. So I stopped going towards that because that's pain, and I start going towards love, and love is being celebrated and being supported and being saying, girl, you did a good job. Keep part out that, okay, is this person celebrating me or tolerating me? Go with the one that is celebrating you, not tolerating you. It makes a big difference,
Oh, yes. Now, I did want to touch on, you have some events coming up, and the one that I know I'm looking forward to is the event Friday, August 28th at 3 o'clock, and it's the He Loves Me Not book sponsorship event. You're speaking at a high school. Can you give us a little bit?
Okay. Yeah, I'll be speaking at the Maya Angelou High School here in Dallas, Texas on August 28th, and the school supports teenage moms and gives them the opportunity to create, to continue their education. So I'll be going out on that day from 3 to 4 o'clock, I believe, and just sharing my story. And also I wanted to be a blessing to the students and give them books as well. So I'm asking for sponsorship to get 35 books for the students there to make sure that each girl has their own book, because it's such a great teaching tool. It's not just a book about my story, but it actually pinpoints a lot of great topics that sometimes are not discussed as a mom or a parent, And so they don't know. And so I want to be their big sister and say, hey, these are some things that you need to know about, you know, whether it's setting boundaries or figuring out some goals for yourself. So on August 28th, I'll be at the Maya Angelou High School speaking. Now, this is a closed setting, Wanda, so you can't come.
But oh, man.
Yeah, it's at a school. But, no, you can come. But I did want to know, people know that that I am taking sponsorship. They can sponsor a book for the young ladies if they go on Eventbrite or go on my website at www.coachingbykimesha.com. Or either on Eventbrite and look for He Loves Me Not book sponsorship. They can sponsor that way. And also,
okay.
I'm excited about your event that's coming up on the 22nd over at Destiny Point Christian Center. So I'm looking forward to that luncheon, and I know it's going to be off the chain.
I'm looking forward to this. We Are Survivors' first event, and it's been a very exciting learning experience. I do want to point out, though, that the venue is actually Stephanie's church. And I'm excited about that. Like I said, she's like the spine of We Are Survivors. She does a lot of stuff behind the scenes. Stephanie's responsible for finding the venue, and she's also responsible for the person that's decorating. So I'm excited about all of it. I really am. And I know that this Saturday, speaking of Stephanie's church, her pastor, there is a gala. It's the Taking a Stand Against Sexual Violence. It's Dancing for Charity. It's a gala. It's the fifth annual. And it is a glamorous evening celebration, hope for transformation and restoration. It is this Saturday. And it's at 7:30. The attire is after 5. The tickets are $50. It is at DeSoto Civic Center, which is 211 East Pleasant Run Road in DeSoto, Texas, 75115. This is through Arise International. And the guest speakers are going to be the district attorney, Susan Hawk, Dr. Renee Hornbuckle, and Richmond Punch. They are going to be speakers there at this event. And, again, that's through AriseInternational.org. If you want to go to their website, it is www.arise, AriseIntl.org for more events. And she was also a guest on the show, I guess, earlier part of last month. Looking forward to that. And Stephanie, do you have anything that you want to say?
Just reminding everybody of our fundraisers. I didn't give all the codes earlier, so I can do that right quick. Our code for Kroger's is 21490. And if you go to KrogerCommunityRewards.com and either put in the code 21490 or click on We Are Survivors, Tom Thumb, our code is 13451. Again, it's 13451. And if you go to TomThumb.com, you can print out the form to link your card to it. Just make sure you put our code in there. And Compass Bank, if you have an account or if you open an account, link it to We Are Survivors. Our code for Compass is 11363. And then for the CPN discount card, and any other help that you need with any of these fundraisers, just text me at 817-320-2571.
And the Compass Bank code is 113631. And, Kamesha, we want to thank you for being on the show. You all, she gave your contact information because she has some more events coming up. She has an event August 29th as well as September 26th, so please go to her site and look at that information. We want to thank you for joining us and want to thank God for you listening. And we will pray for you today and tomorrow and hope that something said on this show has actually touched your heart. And we're here to help God and support you and listen to you and uplift you. In the name of Jesus, we worship you And I just want to say to the listeners and to our guests, God bless you, and we love you. Everyone have a good evening. Good night.
Good night. Bye-bye.